Good morning, and welcome to our daily edition of The Zelda Show, a sprinkling of music, news, interviews, and general chit-chat. Find out more about the Jewish world here and in Israel in a unique and easy manner. Your host and producer, Zelda.
Come fly, El Al, and your spirit will climb ever higher as your heart takes wings. And with the birds it sings, a song of joyous praise. El Al is the airline of Israel that calls for you with open arms. Come fly, El Al, come fly.
Good morning, and how are you this morning? Nice to be back with you. The nation is bowing its head on this Remembrance Day morning, the 20,368 servicemen and women who have fallen in its defense since November 1947, taking into account all those who fell defending the land of Israel. Since 1860, the number reaches 21,954. In the past year, 169 members of the police, IDF, Border Police, Prison Service, Shin Bet, and other organizations have been killed in the service of the state. The main Remembrance Day memorial ceremony took place Wednesday morning, this morning at Jerusalem's Mount Herzl, after a two-minute siren sounded at 11 a.m., bringing the country to a halt. Additional ceremonies took place simultaneously at 43 military cemeteries around the state. We add our voices to the Remembrance Day ceremonies, and we mourn along with Israelis on the loss of the people that worked so hard to defend our country. Let's go to news and Arut Sheva.
This is Israel National Radio, the only independent news talk network in the Middle East, with news every half hour, on the half hour. Now, from the Israel National Radio newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
The head of the Army's Central District Command, Major General Yair Naveh, has told the Ma'ariv daily newspaper in an interview that he has prepared a plan to remove soldiers from the defense of Jewish Hebron and replace them with private security guards. Major General Naveh said that his plan is intended specifically as a threat to the Jews of Hebron because of what he claims is degrading, hostile behavior by the Jewish residents to soldiers under his command. Naveh said he finds it difficult to convince his soldiers in Hebron that their mission there is justified. Spokespeople for the Jewish community say in reaction to the commander's threats that he has acted for some time as if the Jews of Hebron were the enemy. In addition, they say Naveh is slandering us with events that never occurred. Prime Minister Ariel Sharon has vowed to continue the struggle to protect what he called our small scrap of land and bring peace. Speaking at the Mount Herzl ceremony on Israel's Remembrance Day for security servants and terror victims, the Prime Minister said that the memory of the fallen will never be forgotten. Modern Israel, taking time out to remember those who have made the supreme sacrifice before celebrating its 57th birthday, President Moshe Katsav stressing national unity in the opening ceremony at the Western Wall of the Temple in Jerusalem. The president, recently among world leaders at the Moscow observance of the 60th anniversary of the end of World War II, Katsav says representatives of the United States and other countries expressed fear that Prime Minister Sharon's program to remove the Jews from the Gaza Strip and the Jenin area will not take place between Jewish opposition and the threat of Arab terror. Gush Katif residents remain opposed to the government's plan to exhume close to 50 graves and relocate them to a yet undetermined location elsewhere in Israel. In a letter to the Prime Minister, the residents say the graves of their loved ones are not state property and no one has the right to relocate the graves without their permission. In light of Remembrance Day, Defense Minister Shaul Mofaz has expressed hope for discussion with the Jewish Gazans and emphasizes that the families should be the ones to decide where their loved ones will be buried. In an Independence Day interview with the Jerusalem Post, Finance Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has delivered a stinging assault on Sharon's disengagement plan, asserting that it helps fuel an Arab perception that Israel can ultimately be destroyed altogether under unrelenting terrorist assault. At the same time, Netanyahu has also undermined anti-disengagement activists' hopes of thwarting this summer's scheduled withdrawal from the Gaza Strip and the Jenin area, saying it's basically a done deal, adding that he believes the Knesset's approval of the withdrawal reflects the popular will of the Israeli public. What's at stake now, he says, is preventing further unilateral disengagements in the future. Addressing the South American Arab Summit in Brazil, PLO Chairman Mahmoud Abbas has questioned Israel's democracy following recent statements by Prime Minister Sharon and Foreign Minister Sylvain Shalom. Abbas cited Shalom statements calling to suspend the disengagement if Hamas emerges the victor in PLO general elections. The PLO leader also denounced the recent decision by the Prime Minister to delay the disengagement for 3 weeks to mid-August. An Ashdod court has extended the remand of three Shomron residents for 7 days, the three being held over in compliance with a Shin Bet Security Service request based on undisclosed classified evidence against them. They stand accused of planning to block Tel Aviv roads in opposition to the expulsion plan by setting vehicles ablaze. Attorney Uri Kenan says the actions of his clients are legitimate and within the confines of the law, adding he has not seen any evidence linking them to any illegal activities. The government has issued a denial regarding a report that Israel is willing to withdraw from the Har Dov area of the northern border in return for Lebanese terror group Hezbollah disarming. The report appeared in the London-based Arabic-language Al-Sharq al-Awsat newspaper, quoting United Nations Mideast envoy Terry Reid Larson, who stated Israel would turn over the area to Syria. Former Minister of Jerusalem and Diaspora Affairs Natan Sharansky appears to be a leading candidate to become the next chairman of the Jewish Agency for Israel. Chairman Salai Maridor has informed Prime Minister Sharon that he does not plan to seek a second term, announcing that he will be stepping down next month, a year ahead of the completion of his current term. Sharansky last week resigned from the cabinet due to his inability to continue supporting the Gaza disengagement plan.
Joining us now is Dr. Daniel Radd, a graduate in medicine and surgery from Rome, Italy, specializing in permanent allergy elimination and negative emotional release. Dr. Radd is also a researcher in alternative medicine. If you're suffering from food and environmental allergy reaction or have negative emotional issues, call Tuesday or Thursday, 416-269-0151, or Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, 416-535-8034.
Hi, Dr. Radd. How are you this morning? I have some very interesting information that I want to share with our audience, so if you would just be patient for a half a minute, will you do that?
Sure, yes.
Okay, this is a very interesting article. Continental Airlines will be playing an informational video on NAET during the months of May, which is now in June, in all Continental flights globally. Airline Magazine will have a full-page article on NAET during these months, and they hope to inform and educate 8 million-plus travelers about NAET during these months. They have efficient NAET practitioners all over the world ready to provide NAET treatments to people who need it, and viewers will be able to get the NAET practitioner's name and location from our website, which is www.naet.com, and also CNN interviewed a Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, the world-renowned one and only fibromyalgia specialist on NAET and allergy relief, and he said that his chronic pain was removed in a 20-minute treatment session, and the message was heard and viewed by a large group of people all over the world. That's incredible news.
Okay, let's talk about this. People say, what is NAET? Simply, NAET is a technique based on energy medicine and is capable to eliminate any type of allergies, intolerance, hypersensitivities, and related diseases permanently. Why we say related diseases? Because there is no allergy or allergy reaction which is not related to any disease. For example, allergic asthma is related to asthma. Asthma is disease, or is colitis. Colitis is disease, is related to food intolerance, and so on. Now, NAET is able to eliminate any type of allergies, intolerance, hypersensitivities caused by emotional trauma, nutritional trauma, and physical trauma, or genetically inherited, or whatever, even environmental allergies or related diseases permanently. Now, talking about Jacob, a friend of mine, who is in Maryland, and I pass courses with him, with Dr. Devi, and so on. We talk about fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome. The method of NAET in combination with NERT is really effective in order to eliminate chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia forever, permanently, and train the body to be able to survive, to live, in other words, a healthy living in pollution, environmental pollution, emotional pollution, and nutritional pollution or physical pollution caused by any type of trauma. In other words, two type of treatments, NAET and NERT, both they are radical type of treatment that goes to the foundation and to the root of the problem and eliminates it from foundation. Is not palliative, is not massage therapy, is not acupuncture therapy, is not herbal therapy, is not supplementing patients or adding some enzymes in order to improve digestive system. Just goes to the base and fixes, in other words, programs the system from digitalized the subconscious mind. In other words, changing our wrong programs and programming with right program makes the body to be able to know allergen as a friend and digest it and process it, eliminate it or absorb it if it's necessary. Something good is produced and keep the body healthy in all type of pollution.
Well, that's incredible news, and it's really a first to think that airlines are going to be giving people the information they need. And this Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, who you say you know?
Yeah, he's a friend of mine.
He's a friend of yours, okay. And I mean that his chronic pain was removed for fibromyalgia in a 20-minute treatment, which is quite incredible.
When he was in medical school, second or third year, after one flu infection, in other words, after catching cold,
right,
in short period of time, he was debilitated and couldn't move. That means fibromyalgia happened suddenly, and he was sick for years, and slowly, gradually, through NAT and some other treatment, he came back to normal. That's why we say, you know, even I hear from patients, somebody says, Dr. Rod, I had just a quick flu for 3 days, but still I am sick. That after that 3 days, I am not back to normal. That means this body, this system was debilitated, the immune system was down and deficient, therefore couldn't get rid of that kind of virus or fungus or whatever was attacking it.
All right, maybe when you're in the studio with us another time, maybe we can get Dr. Teitelbaum on the air with us by telephone and ask him to give us a testimonial. Dr. Rad, thank you very much for joining us. Have a wonderful day. Take care.
Dr. Daniel Rad will return tomorrow morning with more information on allergy elimination and other complementary methods. Dr. Rad is located at two convenient locations, 2753 Eglinton Avenue East, Suite 202, telephone 416-269-0151 or 800 Bathurst Street, Suite 205, telephone 416-535-8034.
The Mitzvah Moment with Rabbi Mendel Kaplan is proudly made possible by the Unity Referral Network, URN, bringing Jews together in business and pleasure. For business referrals, visit our website at www.unityreferralnetwork.com. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Zelda Young, and I'm an ardent fan of auctions. I can't wait to get my hands on something beautiful and expensive to fit into my home. But like you, I hate to pay full price. Empire Auctions fits perfectly into my budget and timetable with an incredible collection and selection of fantastic high-end furniture, unique antiques, artwork, estate jewelry, rugs, and much more. Empire Auctions fills all my requirements of a day or evening well spent at truly fabulous prices. So satisfy your fine taste at Empire Auctions. Just log on to EmpireAuctions.com for times and dates. That's EmpireAuctions.com. And make sure you say that Zelda sent you.
Good morning, Rabbi Kaplan. How are you today?
Good morning, Zelda. Wonderful. Thank God. And how are you?
Good. Thank you.
That's great. You know, this week's parsha is called Emor. Emor means to say. And in it, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Emor, you should speak to the children of Aaron, V'amarta aleihem, and you should say to them. And so all of the classic commentaries ask the same question. Why does it say Emor to say twice in a row? Rashi's answer is, Lahazhir gedolim alaktanim. Because the Torah wants those who are more mature, those who are older and more experienced, to warn and to be careful with regard to those who are younger, less mature and inexperienced. Interestingly, the word lahazhir, which means to warn, also comes from the same Hebrew word zohar, which means radiance. We find a similar concept later on in the Parsha when we talk about the mitzvah that we fulfill each and every day during this month. And that's Sfirat HaOmer, the counting of the Omer. Because the word Sfira, which means to count, is also an idiom of the word Sapir, which means luminescent, or something that shines. And there is a common denominator here. Chassidus tells us that what the Torah wants us to know is that by fulfilling our life's mission, by looking out for those who are younger, more inexperienced, or even less fortunate, by making our hours, our days, and our weeks count, we can achieve a sense of radiance, a sense of luminance, a sense of shining, an inner essence that can be revealed. You see, every one of us possesses a godly soul, a godly soul that is full of light, that can illuminate the environment. It's only that we have our bodily needs or concerns, our own selfishness, our own small-minded way of looking at things that prevent that light from shining through. And the Torah tells us that a mitzvah is an opportunity to make that light available, the ability to peel away a layer so that the light of Torah and mitzvot can shine for ourselves, for our loved ones, and for our entire environment. Mitzvahs are a great opportunity. When they come our way, let's grab them so that our inner essence can shine forth for all to see.
The Mitzvah Moment with Rabbi Mendel Kaplan will return next time, brought to you by the Unity Referral Network. For business referrals, visit us at www.unityreferralnetwork.com. This is our B'nai B'rith Report, and Ruth Klein is with us this morning. She's the National Director of the League for Human Rights. We haven't spoken to Ruth for quite some time. How are you this morning, Ruth?
I'm fine, Zelda. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to have you with us. Okay, front page, the National Post, Tories win vote, Grits ignore it, 153-150.
Yes, it's going to be well worth watching what goes on over the next few days, I would say.
All right, now what does that actually mean?
Well, it's part of the conservative strategy of bringing down the government. If they can't bring it down with one vote, then they will persevere. I mean, that's the message they're sending us. We're going to probably see more of this type of these motions, and it's going to grow, I suppose. We'll have to see how long the Liberals can ignore that type of no confidence demonstration.
Now, what happens if, in fact, the government says, yes, okay, I'm going to resign the prime minister? Does that mean an election will be called almost immediately? Are they going to wait? They're trying to wait for the budget to come through to show people that it's going to be better than they've ever seen before. They're waiting for the investigation to be finalized. What's the method behind all of this? What's the reasoning behind all of this?
Well, I think probably we're looking at the budget would be the last opportunity for the Conservatives to bring down the government. I mean, what they're trying to do is bring it down before. We have to see what strategies they're going to undertake. They could sort of look for an effective shutdown of Parliament, like voting to adjourn the House of Commons each day before the legislative business starts. That's one possibility. They could boycott the House. It's another possibility. But I think that they'll probably try and push through a few more of these votes. And, you know, if you get even the effect of this one non-confidence type of vote, it will grow. I mean, it will be impossible to ignore over the long term.
Okay. It's obvious that Jack Layton is, with Prime Minister Martin, and now they say that, Parti Québécois, Gilles Duceppe, is with the Conservatives. But in the paper this morning, it says forcing a spring election could hurt the Conservative Party at the ballot box almost as much as testimony from the sponsorship inquiry, which could lower support for the government, according to a survey released yesterday.
Well, it's not entirely clear that if there's an election, it doesn't necessarily follow that the Conservatives will win. They're confident that they can, pull the necessary votes. But I think the jury's out on whether it's a definite, whether the Liberals can't sort of make a comeback, notwithstanding all the evidence we've been hearing in the sponsorship scandal.
Ruth, why do you think the public has voted Liberal for so many years, and even in spite of what's going on with the sponsorship scandal and other things, that people continue to support the Liberals.
It is an amazing thing, really, that in spite of a scandal like this, that sort of diehard Liberal supporters will continue. I heard some interviews on the radio today, just with a sort of general man in the street, people saying, well, basically, they don't trust anybody, they don't trust any of the leaders, but they'll still vote Liberal. I think in countries in Europe, this type of scandal would have brought the government down. I think it's quite unusual that you will still have people hanging on and showing support in spite of the evidence that we're hearing every day. I mean, it is very damning. It's an unusual Canadian phenomenon, I think. Maybe Canadians don't get sort of riled up about this type of thing.
Well, it's interesting because we seem to continue on in the same way over and over again, despite the fact we had Chrétien for so many years. We have Martin now. We just can't seem to make any change. I mean, we had a conservative government for very short spaces of time. And usually it's the conservatives that are in the provincial parties, and then they're Liberals in the federal, and that seems for some reason to create some sort of balance. But I'm not really sure. What do you think about all of that?
Well, the Conservatives clearly have a lot of work to do still to gain the confidence of the country. But the truth is that for any democracy, change is healthy, change is good, and it's probably good for all parties concerned. A change would force every party to reevaluate and review what it's doing, its relationship with the public, to recommit. So, I'm watching this election with interest to see whether Canadians will just do the Canadian thing and let everything ride. I mean, that seems to be sort of a Canadian attribute.
Right, well, it's sitting on the fence. If, in fact, a conservative government comes into power, what type of changes do you think we might see?
Well, I mean, they have an impressive sort of platform, but I'm not sure whether you'll see those types of changes immediately, because I think that they'll still need to consolidate. Conservatives come in, they'll probably be a minority government. So we're going to see the same type of dynamics, trying to gain support from allies in the House. I don't know if we're looking at tremendous changes yet. Any minority government has to really establish itself before it can move ahead aggressively with an agenda of change.
Well, do you think that Mr. Harper has the kind of... I mean, I don't know what you need to be prime minister, basically, because we haven't had any sort of young, vibrant prime ministers, and Stephen Harper is about the closest that we're coming to that, but he doesn't seem to have the appeal that people want. Is it because he's not able to connect to people as yet? What do you think it is that he needs to be able to pass on to the public?
I think to move on to the next stage, probably, he needs the chance. I think it's very different being in the opposition to being, in the driver's seat. And I think that the jury really is out. We have to see him in power. We have to see him in the position, and then he'll show us what he can do.
Well, it just seems to me that we're stuck. We never seem to move very well, very quickly, and we can see that right now. But if they bring the government down, when do you think an election might be called?
Well, an election could be called, the election would be called probably almost immediately, and then there's 30 days. We have a 30-day mandate to hold the election.
So what would it take, what would the Liberals have to do in order to get this moving immediately? And you know what, it's very difficult to call an election in such a short space of time, and if in fact that's going to happen, because there are a lot of members of Parliament that have to be put into place. People are changing all the time, so it's, and people don't know who they are as well, so it makes it quite difficult.
Oh, it is very difficult. I recall the election of last year, getting everything into place, and of course we hold an election task force every year, trying to meet as many prospective MPs who are running as possible, because we think it's very important that there is that outreach and connection to the community. But I think that we can safely say one thing. If the elections win, or not, if there is an election and the Liberals win it again, I think there might be a feeling in the public that with the sponsorship scandal, there has been no accountability. And I don't think that would be a very good thing. There do have to be repercussions. There do have to be some sort of, as I said, some sort of holding to account after a massive scandal like that. And I think in the long term, it might even be better for the Liberals, because just to leave a party in power with that type of shadow over it, I don't think it's very healthy for anybody.
Well, if Mr. Martin does resign, or the party or whatever step aside, would that mean that he would not be the leader any longer and somebody else would be up for the post?
Well, not necessarily.
Are you serious?
It doesn't necessarily follow that way. I mean,
forgive and forget.
We just see Mr. Howard in England, who in England it's much more common that if a party loses an election, the leader of the party will step aside. But I don't think that's the case in Canada necessarily. We would have to wait and see, really. But I don't think it necessarily means that if there was an election and they lost it. I think that I'm pretty confident that Paul Martin has the support within his own party to continue as leader and to stand again. And we might be looking again at minority government in another early election.
God.
We could be looking at a very turbulent time.
Well, that's unfortunate. And you know, we see this quite frequently. I mean, in Israel, we see a leader going and then he comes back again. I mean, we don't see any new blood. We see just the transference of power for a short period of time, and back again comes another person. So basically, nothing's really changed.
Well, you know, if the Conservatives do win at an election and it's only a minority government, then, you know, who knows? Who knows what we're looking at over the next few years? It might be a period of change and instability, which actually isn't good for anybody. We need to see one party come ahead with a clear mandate. That,
right.
That really would be the best scenario.
Well, I don't think we're going to see it at this short space of time, but we'll talk to you again, Ruth Klein. Thank you so much for joining
us. You're welcome.
Take care. Bye.
Travel with Zelda. Listen to her on www.zeldayoung.com.
Introducing Dr. Pat Poon, PhD and MD, with his revolutionary metabolic diet. Dr. Poon's metabolic diet book is now available by calling 905-737-3237 or emailing info@poondiet.com. By the way, you can log on to my website and write in and link right into Dr. Pat Poon's by just logging on to www.zeldayoung.com or Dr. Poon's at poondiet.com. How are you this morning, Dr. Poon?
Very good, thank you.
Nice to have you with us, and we're looking forward to this new book of yours that you're going to be putting out on recipes. What's it going to be called?
We don't have a name yet,
but
it will be Dr. Poon's diet recipe book and exercise.
All right. Well, I'm sure you'll let us know so we can share it with our audience at some point. All right. Misconception of diabetes. What is the biggest misconception of diabetes?
I think the biggest misconception is the doctor will tell the patient there's no hope for them. The misconception is that when you become diabetic, you'll become diabetic for life. And there's a big study done in the UK. And they show that no matter what kind of diet you put on, no matter what medicine, even insulin you put on, you are doomed. After 15 years on become diabetic, you will run out of your insulin and you will end up with using insulin. And that is the biggest misconception. Now, this has been taught by the diabetic clinic, by the dietitian, by the endocrinologist to the patient. What they missed the point is they were put on the wrong diet. I think that is the worst thing that we've been serving our public, is to put the patient on the wrong diet and they keep on gaining.